This is not your usual Frequent Miler on the Air episode. This is our Ask Us Anything live session, recorded and brought to you in podcast format.
Once a month, the Frequent Miler team gets together live on YouTube to answer your questions.
Ask us questions about points, miles, credit cards, airline and hotel loyalty programs. We don't know what's coming next, and neither do you.
Enjoy.
I like it. This is our monthly live, brought to you not live on a podcast.
Right, we're live, aren't we?
We are
live on the internet, where everything fun happens.
This is Frequent Milers Ask Us Anything, and first up, I think Carrie's going to ask us something because we're going to.
I think Nick is going to ask Greg something about a post he just wrote.
Well, yeah, Greg, I saw that you wrote a post that sounded really interesting about Qatar Airways and finding availability. Tell me about it because I haven't read it yet.
Yeah, it all started with me. I just wanted to update my post on how to find Qatar Award Space. And my old post on it is all based on using American Airlines to find the space. But the problem is that I'd noticed that American Airlines doesn't have access to a lot of award space that's available through other programs, like British Airways in particular, I knew had better access than American to Qatar's award space. And so I went down this like big rabbit hole of like trying to figure out what the pattern was. And it turns out that there are like a lot of levels of who gets award space and what kind. And so I wrote this post just like identifying the different levels of award space I found. Now, the broadest one, the one we already knew about, is that Qatar itself has access to these like double priced awards that aren't available to others. And there's nothing new about that. No other partner has access to those. Those are called Flexi awards. What's new, I think, I've never read it anywhere that I can remember, is that Qatar and some of its partners have access to awards that are priced. So normally, Saver awards from between the U.S. and Doha are priced 70,000 points one way with Qatar for business class.
Wait, can I hop in for a quick second? I thought that we had agreed to stop calling it Qatar.
Oh, you're right. Qatar. Qatar business class normally costs 70,000. Normally costs 70,000 points when Savers Awards available. And if it wasn't available, my understanding was your only choice then is to pay double that to get the next level. But no, there's something in between. There are awards available that Qatar and Iberia and sometimes British Airways have access to, which cost 94,500 points one way. So it's like,
that's interesting. So yeah, because you access to more space for a little bit more.
Yeah, for just a bit more. And so I found that really interesting, you know, for several reasons, just like which partners had them and why. Like the fact that Iberia seems to always have them if Qatar has them, but British Airways only sometimes has them if the other two have them, was strange. Another finding was that Virgin Australia has access to those awards at their usual award rate. Like they don't inflate the price of those 94.5K awards. That said, they always charge 92K to 104K depending on how long the flight is. So it's not like it's a cheaper way of booking anyway, not significantly. And no one really from the US has access to those miles anyway. So there's no transfer program that transfers to them other than the Australian version of Amex that I know of, and none of us have that. So, there were those levels, and then at the 70K saver level, then you have another tier of things, which is JetBlue now has access anytime that there are 70K awards available to Qatar. JetBlue also has access to those, as far as I can tell. And so then you've got cheaper award fees, and you get the free cancellations and changes. And so, or at least cancellations. And but American Airlines and Alaska don't have access to those necessarily. They have access to just a tiny subset of those. Whereas so, Alaska does have access to way more award space than anyone else, except for Qatar, except they charge out the wazoo for those, for most of those. So when I say Alaska doesn't have access to them, I really mean at the cheaper level. At the Alaska charges around 70K or 85K, depending on how far the flight is for those flights. And they have very little availability, very, very little, just like American. Same availability as American.
So let me ask you a question that I'm guessing maybe you answered in the post, but I haven't yet had a chance to read it. And that is, did you determine if there was a fare class available that would tell us when JetBlue is going to have access? Because like, that's super helpful for leaving the United States, because you'll know if Qatar is charging 70K, then JetBlue also has access to that space. But what if I'm looking at a flight that originates in Asia and goes to Europe or something? Is there have we identified which fare class it is, so I'll know that, oh, maybe I can book that flight through JetBlue or a different partner?
I didn't check that. My general suggestion is to a lot of tools let you search Virgin Australian award space, and I suggest using that program to identify whether there's awards availability, and if they are, they're probably available to JetBlue. The few that are those, what I'm calling the 94.5K awards, are not, but that's a very small percentage of the flights out there. So I think you start with Virgin Australia, which is weird because you're not going to book with Virgin Australia, but you start with that. And if you find award space, then check, does American or Alaska have access to it? Probably not, but just check, why not? Next one, check JetBlue. And then from there, you might want to check, just book with, Qatar itself, I think is probably the best option in many cases.
So I have a question from somebody who relates to this, and, I've got another one queued up in case you already just answered that while I was, finding it in the YouTube, commenters. They ask, did you notice, Greg, that there were some, QR is Qatar, right?
Qatar, yeah.
Qatar flights that were available through JetBlue, but not British Airways. Is that the reverse of what you're describing, or is that exactly what you're describing?
I did not notice that, but that's certainly possible. There's no way that I noticed every trend out there. So that wouldn't surprise me that much, because British Airways just seems, I almost feel like when it can't see award space, that might be a website error or something more than a true thing that they can't see it. And so it wouldn't surprise me if that's more common than just those 94.5K awards.
All right, Stephen. So we're going to move on from that topic till we get more Qatar questions from folks. Do you use the app Flighty? If yes, any improvements you want them to make? And then does anyone else use that app? If not?
No, this is an easy one for me to answer. No, I have not.
Anyone?
I don't know about Nick or Greg.
I do use it. I guess what I want to know is the Flighty, developers or owners here? Is that where we got the question?
I don't know.
It could be. I mean, years ago, someone who created Flighty had reached out to me and offered me a free trial, and that's why I have it on my phone. I just don't remember their name. But yeah, I like it a lot. I don't know. I can't off the top of my head think of, oh, I've got one suggestion. I sync flights from TripIt, but Flighty does not remove flights that I remove from TripIt, and I really wish it would, because that's really
so
annoying.
Not to take Carrie's job here, because I know Carrie feeds the questions, but as somebody who doesn't use Flighty, and since most of us here clearly don't, what is Flighty? Can you explain to all the people out there like me that don't use it yet?
Sure. It's an app that tracks flights, and specifically, at least the way I use it is I put all my trips in TripIt, and I connect Flighty to TripIt, so it knows all the flights I'm going to take. And then it just sends me like alerts about the flight. Like, so if the flight's going to be delayed, it seems to know it before anyone else does. It knows about gate changes. It knows about equipment swaps and things like that before I get alerted by anyone else. So it's a little bit redundant from like the airline apps and TripIt itself, what it does. But at the same time, sometimes it has more timely information. So I like that.
Nice. All right, Nick, is there a reason so many credit cards are dropping Priority Pass?
I mean, probably. My guess would be that it's more expensive than what they want to pay. I mean, that's basically the same reason you might drop a credit card, because the annual cost of it isn't adding up for you. And so I'm guessing that Priority Pass either just needs more money to economically make it work for them. And so maybe they've increased their prices. I don't know that for sure. But at any rate, apparently issuers don't think that it's worth whatever the cost to them is to offer to their members. Now, that's probably a mix of data. A, it might be the cost, you know, whatever they're getting charged by Priority Pass, or then it might also be they have a lot more data than I do in terms of which benefits their cardholders are actually using. And so, you know, maybe they're looking at it and saying not enough cardholders are using it enough to make it a benefit that they think is valuable enough. Now, you know, whether or not that's the case, I don't have any inside information. My first instinct would be that the cost is just it's not working out to be cost effective for them. It's disappointing. It's too bad, because it's something that I think a lot of people like. Although I haven't made great use of it the last couple of years. I just haven't been in enough situations where it did work out for me. Maybe it's all my fault.
It's your fault. You should have used it more. All right.
I mean, one other thing that I'd quickly add to that as well is that not all cards that you might have read about recently are dropping Priority Pass. Some of them are just dropping the restaurants part as well. Mm-hmm. So that's what's happened most recently with Ritz-Carlton and Sapphire Reserve cards as well. So it might be that like you might have like seen a headline and thought that they were getting rid of Priority Pass. And certainly like the Hilton Business Card or was it Surpass? Is getting rid of the actual Priority Pass benefit itself. Right. So you just need to kind of like make sure that if you're considering getting rid of a card because you think it's dropping Priority Pass, make sure that the changes are actually what you think they are, because it might be that you're keeping it in one form or another.
That's a good point. And the cards that have dropped it in general have been, I think, am I right here? Cards that only offered a limited number of visits per year as it was. So it's not the cards that offer unlimited visits haven't dropped it. They've just dropped the restaurant access, which, you know, apparently that is a, you know, a point of contention for them.
Mm-hmm. All right. This is the question for everybody. We're going to start with Greg. What program do you have the strongest love-hate relationship with?
Delta. Do I need to say more?
Probably not, but just in case. Yeah.
So Delta is great to fly. I think they do a terrific job in the air. And I think some of their top tier elite benefits are really good. I like their lounges when they're not overcrowded. There's things that are really, really frustrating, like the fact that they hardly ever release any award space to their partners. How can they call them partners when they're not ever going to give their partners access to their flights? Anyway, that's
all right. Steven, how about you? Love hate relationship?
I'll probably have to go with Marriott, just because I've had titanium status with them for like several years, because it's been like relatively easy to get it first because of COVID, but also because I start off with 30 nights each year. And so it's been kind of like really easy to get that, but this year I should end up locking in lifetime platinum. So that'll kind of make titanium less of a push in the future, or kind of like less of a priority. But it's just hard because their properties cost so many more points now than they did. And like that's often the case with a lot of award programs, but it feels like since we've been on the road trip, Marriott's the one that's had overall the worst devaluation, I think, for us in terms of what we were able to book back in 2018 rather than what we can book now. If anything, I'd almost say that IHG is better than it had been back then. Like I feel like I get so much better value out of it now. And so yeah, I think it would have to be Marriott, just because it's fairly easy to earn titanium status, but then like if you're trying to book it with points, then it costs you a whole big amount. So yeah.
How about you, Nick?
You know, Marriott would be my answer to this also, but slightly different reasons, I think. For me, it's the fact that A, it's overly complex, that the benefits, the elite benefits, are so inconsistent between brands and like just overall, because they don't offer the same benefits at all brands. And then when it comes to individual hotels that are trying to play games and not offer a benefit the way it's meant to be offered, Marriott does very little to enforce that in general. So you don't really feel like you've got much backing as a member, but at the same time, they're everywhere, you know. So I end up staying at Marriott's a lot because they are so, they have such a wide-ranging footprint. And actually, the opposite from Stephen, I have found that points have been pretty valuable continuously for me, have continued to be pretty valuable. Now, that's, I think, a difference between Stephen and I in terms of which properties we're aiming for, probably, because Stephen's looking probably, I'm assuming, more of the long-term stay type properties, Residence Inn, at the lower end of the point spectrum, which many of those have gone up. I feel like the mid-tiers of Marriott, it varies, and I often find situations where I'm getting 1 cent per point or more in the 30 to 40 to 50,000 points per night. But I'm not, you know, I'm not trying to stay on the road 365 days a year. So for the handful of times per year that I need that type of property, it's meeting my needs from an award perspective. It's just really, to, for me, it's the inconsistency in elite benefits and the lack of effort on Marriott's end to ensure that consistency.
And just in case Marriott's disappointed that it didn't run a full sweep, I have to say Marriott was my first thought answer to this question. I just have a little stronger ties to Delta in both the love and hate side. So,
well, and you know, worry, I didn't emphasize the love. I mean, there's plenty of great Marriott properties out there. I mean, that's why it's a love-hate relationship, right? Because there's, I mean, tons of the old SPG properties that are in the Marriott portfolio these days are just really nice places to stay. Yeah. So there's a lot of reasons still to like it, even if, you know, I hate it.
Yeah.
Some
we just don't like having to consult a chart to see whether we can go down and get a free breakfast.
Yeah, yeah, that's ridiculous. So the fact that we
do you have
like,
that
live,
printed and laminated,
breathe
at all?
This stuff and have to consult a chart is ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah. We need to sell a frequent miler branded do you get breakfast chart.
Yeah, a pocketbook like guide or something like that. All right, Greg, this one's going to go to you. Which ways of booking business / premium economy domestic flights have the best availability at reasonable cost? I'm trying to make longer positioning flights more comfortable for 2 to 5 people.
Wow. Business, premium economy. I don't really know much about availability of premium economy. There's very few times when you can use partner award programs to book premium economy, although that's starting to happen now with especially with like Alaska. But there's not a lot of that for domestic flights anyway. So I think what you're really talking about is booking regional first class. And so you'll see, I had a whole post about booking regional first class with Qatar miles really cheaply. And Nick has a more thorough post on booking best ways to book flights within the US. And I think that's the best place to start, is just look there and see, you know, the different options, because there's a bunch of different options for doing that that are good pricing. And as far as what availability will like, that would be like, that's so dependent on time of year, what route you're looking at, and a million other things that I can't mention any trends.
All right, Stephen, this next one is for you. What's the best way to pay for my 28-day Marriott stay? Perfect for Stephen. CSR, Ritz, or Hyatt for getting globalist status?
Of those three, I'd most likely go for the Ritz, just because I think that'll, like, does the Ritz give 6x on Marriott stays? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'd probably go for that over earning 3x on the Sapphire Reserve, but that would be like up to you as to whether or not you prefer like 6 Marriott points to 3 Ultimate Reward points. So personally, just because I don't end up racking up Marriott points too much, then I would prefer to do that. But you might end up getting better value by paying with a CSR. With your Hyatt card, I'm assuming you're just trying to go, you're considering that just because you're trying to spend like 5,000 to get to Elite Night credits or something like that. Otherwise, like paying with your Hyatt card, I wouldn't have thought would have any particular benefit unless it was targeted for one of the like quarterly bonus things and it bonuses on travel or something like that this quarter maybe, but I don't think that's the case. So yeah, personally I'd go for Ritz, but CSR could be a good option. But something else that's worth considering you've got a 28-day thing booked, depending on what state you're in, it would be worth looking into whether or not it would be cheaper to book a 31-day stay, just because A, you might get a cheaper rate for booking it as kind of like a proper month-long thing, but also something like 50% of states around the country don't charge you any tax if you stay for 31 days or longer. And so even though you'd be paying for 3 additional days there, you might actually spend less long-term, depending on how much the tax would end up being. And that's if the state even allows you to do that in the first place. If you actually, what I'll do is in the comments on YouTube, I'll drop a link to a post I'd written about that, because within there's also a link to a site where you can check which states will waive the tax on a long-term stay like that.
Nice. Very cool. Cool. Nick, on a podcast, you said you were going to pick up the Brilliant card, even without the sign-up bonus. Would you not consider temporarily product changing your Ritz cards to be eligible for the sign-up bonus?
Good question. So I said I would consider picking up the Brilliant card without the welcome bonus. Whether or not I actually will is going to just depend on how much I need to use those platinum level benefits this year, which is still remains to be seen. So I don't know for sure. Now, would I product change my Ritz cards in order to be eligible for the welcome bonus? I wouldn't, though I don't know. I mean, maybe if I ran the numbers, I should. My hesitation there is that I have an old grandfathered Ritz card that only has a $395 annual fee. And so paying $395 for $300 in travel incidental credits and an 85K certificate every year is really attractive. If I product changed and then went back to a Ritz, I'd be paying $450 a year. So it cost me $50 a year. Now, I guess, you know, the value of the initial welcome bonus is probably high enough on the Brilliant to sort of offset that for a while. But I don't know whether I don't know. Maybe I should think about it.
I wouldn't.
Initially, my reaction would have been no. Yeah. Okay, good. So Greg, the frequent miler, is in my corner. Why?
Well, for what you just said, I mean, if you mess with it, right now you have what seems to be lifetime $55 savings every year.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so for the short term gain that you know, I don't see it being worth it.
All right. Greg, the frequent miler, has spoken. Now, this is the question for everybody. Any favorite resources for finding interesting things to do in a country? I have several destinations that I want to visit for 1 to 2 things I know about, but would need more to fill the trip. We're going to start with Greg.
I'm going to go with what I said last time, which is ask the question on Frequent Miler Insiders, our Facebook group. You'll get great answers there.
Stephen, how about you?
I mean, there's the obvious thing of like TripAdvisor. So that's something that we do just to see if there's any kind of like obvious things. And then what I'll sometimes do is just take a look at where we're actually going to be staying in a hotel if we've already got a hotel booked, and then just look at what's in the kind of general area on Google Maps, just because sometimes you'll uncover some like random things that you wouldn't generally find on TripAdvisor or that people wouldn't necessarily recommend. But you can end up finding some like real hidden gems that way. So that's what I would say. And then does Atlas Obscura do international, or is that only the US?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, because I think you're a fan of Atlas Obscura, aren't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, although they've
gotten... I'm going to punt my answer to Carrie, because Carrie is probably more qualified to answer this.
Well, I was going to say Atlas Obscura, but they've gotten so extensive now that it's almost less useful than it was when they had less stuff. So now they'll include, like, the this is the restaurant so-and-so wrote this book at or whatever. You know, so now it's leaning more on the Obscura a bit, but I still like it for gems.
Guess who decided to drop by? Tim is coming here.
Or at Welcome least Tim. His name. Well, at least
maybe. His name showed up anyway.
He's threatening. He's threatening to tune in.
If you guys are all super excited that Tim joined us, please thumbs up this video. This video.
Yeah. Or if you're disappointed he showed up, still like the video.
Still like the video, yeah.
Either way.
Either way.
Don't let my showing up stop you from liking the video, for sure.
Correct. Tim, we might as well throw you right in and add you to this group question. What are your favorite resources for finding interesting things to do in a country?
Oh, wow. Carrie Yoder is pretty good.
I already went.
No, I mean, Carrie Yoder is pretty good for interesting things to do in a country. You know, I'm old school, so I use a lot of blogs now, but I always have a travel guide for wherever I go. And it's like a for real travel guide. My two favorites are The Rough Guide and Lonely Planet, although and this is a little bit of inside baseball, but Lonely Planet's of the last couple of years, I think they've taken a downturn. So I tend to go to Rough Guides now. And I kind of use that to get a general map of sort of things that I want to do and places that I want to go in a country. And then I'll go, once I kind of have that skeleton, I'll flesh it out with local blogs, things that I read on, like from people that have been there, and occasionally TripAdvisor, but it usually starts with an actual physical book with physical pages and mm-hmm. then goes to, yeah, wow, those still exist.
That's cool.
Yeah, totally old school. And then, kind of flesh it out with blogs.
All right, Nick, you didn't think of anything in the meantime?
No, I didn't even try because I knew you guys would have good answers. I mean, yeah, my answer is I ask my wife to find stuff to do. I tell her, listen, I'll get us there and find a good place to stay, but your job is going to be to find the things to do. And she does a great job of that. So that's my favorite resource, is just leaning on her to, to pull that end of the trip, because there's only so many hours in the day, right? So that's how we divide and conquer.
If you're okay with spontaneous, we used to also like to ask the restaurant workers. So we'd go out for breakfast and then we'd ask them what we should go out and see. And but then you can't plan ahead. All right, we're going to shuffle along. And I think this one will be, who wants to speak on Capital One?
That's always Nick. I don't remember where we're at. Nick's our official Capital One spokesperson.
I vote Nick. Greg.
we'll give it to Nick. I earned a bunch of Capital One points, hoping to use them one day on Turkish, but with the devaluation, what do you think some other good uses are?
Using them via Turkish to fly United. That's my favorite. Domestic flights on United are still 10,000 miles each way. So it was a relatively small devaluation. So 10,000 miles each way domestically, including Alaska and Hawaii, 15K if you actually find that unicorn United business class award seat. So that would be my next one. Then after that, if we're going to leave Turkish aside for a second, then I think my next thing that I love is I love Aeroplan, because Aeroplan offers stopover on a one-way award for 5,000 additional miles and plenty of sweet spots that I think are interesting and unique. I like their award program. So that's probably my next favorite. And, if you want to kind of do something a little wild and crazy and not necessarily as high value from some perspectives, Wyndham. I mean, Wyndham is 1-to-1, which if you have a Wyndham earner business card and you're getting 8X at the gas stations, rather, then this isn't going to interest you. And if you would buy Wyndham points for less than a penny a piece when they're on sale, this also probably won't interest you. But if you're not in those two buckets, then transferring to Wyndham to use them for Vacasa, I think, is another reasonable use of Capital One miles. I mean, they've got a great set of transfer partners. So I'm picking out a few here, but most of their transfer partners are good. So I think you've got quite a few decent options there. I mean, Greg just talked about the various ways to book Qatar business class. And so you've got Finnair as a partner, which you can't yet probably book Qatar Airways business class, but you've got Finnair's own flights anyway, and some more availability to Finnair members. And then as you hopefully eventually will be able to move the Avios around. I think also you've got Qatar itself as a transfer partner of Capital One, if I remember correctly. And so you could, you know, have some Avios. I mean, there's so many different options. So I feel like they're a good program to lean on. Now you want to just check out our Capital One Miles Complete Guide. And there's lots of different sweet spots that we highlight either in that, or maybe there's a Capital One Miles sweet spots post separately. Hopefully somebody will find a link and pop that in the chat.
And don't forget baseball games, Nick, when they have those.
I got tickets to a game. Yeah. Greg made a great point there. Yeah, Major League Baseball. They've got a partnership with Major League Baseball. So every single baseball game all year long, they've got four seats that are usually great seats, a few rows from the field that are only 5,000 miles a ticket. They also have access to lots and lots of horrible seats for really bad redemption rates. But there are four seats somewhere close to the field that are listed as $40, even though they're often in a section that costs $100 or $200 or more a ticket. So but you got to hop on those. Like, we'll post them as soon as we know they're available, and you got to hop on it in the first couple of hours because the games will be gone the same day that they come out usually.
What a random tip. I love it. So now we're going to switch to Tim. I have a question. How can I book Swiss Rail Pass? I've tried everywhere and I just can't find it. Is there a way to use any airline points or just pay cash for that? I didn't even know there was a Swiss specific rail pass. Hoping you know something about it, Tim.
No, I've never been to Switzerland. But based on everybody's facial reactions, I'm guessing everybody but Steven knows a lot about it.
I was just about to say, when I saw that, I figured no one here probably knew. And so I Googled in advance just to see if I could find it. I just Googled Swiss Travel Pass. Oh, no, I Googled Swiss Rail Pass. And the very first option that came up said Swiss Travel Pass. And on that website, which is sbb.ch, on there you can just buy a ticket if you like. I mean, I've never heard about being able to book it with airline miles or anything like that, but yeah, it looks like you can just buy the tickets on there with cash, so that shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah, I think the short answer is you can't, to our knowledge, use airline miles to book Swiss rail pass. I did look into this years ago because I've been to Switzerland, but I don't think anything I learned back then is relevant today.
Well, and anything you want to know about train travel in general, Man in Seat 61 is the blog to go to. They've literally got almost everything you'd ever want to know about train travel.
Man in Seat 61?
Yep.
Okay.
Is that man singular or men plural?
Man singular.
Okay.
Otherwise, it would be a little bit uncomfortable sitting on a train.
That's what I was concerned.
Several men in seats.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm not trusting the advice of people who have two guys in one seat. Like, they're gone from the get-go.
I think I have another question. I made myself lost in my notes, but I think we're at Greg. Does that sound right? Several airlines use Avios, and they may have different expiration policy. Can I transfer from one to the other to avoid expiration?
That's a good question. I would assume so, but I never looked at that. Does anyone know the answer to that for sure?
Yes, you can. But it doesn't reset the expiration of what you transfer into. So for instance, let's say you have Iberia Avios that are expiring in 3 months and BA Avios that are expiring in 2 years. If you transfer, your BA doesn't extend to 3 years. It stays at the 2 year mark, and now those Avios are good until the end, whatever your currently existing BA expiration date is. So it doesn't reset the clock on the program that you're transferring to, but it will then go by whatever that clock is at on the program that you're transferring to. So it can be used to extend them, but it doesn't actually extend that clock on the transfer to program, if that makes sense.
That does. And so if you transfer to Iberia, then you would suddenly be taking them from a 2 year expiration to a 3 month expiration,
correct,
for example, right?
Correct. Correct. So that's correct.
It looks like they're all at 36 months now. So I think they must have aligned themselves recently. Because when I saw that question, I Googled that one too, just to check. And like Aer Lingus, BA, Iberia, and Qatar, like, all say that they're 36 months. So they seem to have aligned.
Well, but the deal is, though, that it's not necessarily that they're all at 36 months, but they're all at 36 months from your last activity. So they will still all be at different times because, like, let's say your last activity was 2 years for Qatar, 1 year for Iberia, and 0 months or 0 years for BA. You would have a 3 year expiration for BA, a 2 year expiration on Iberia, and 1 year for Qatar. So that's why you should pay attention very closely when you try to do that. Because if you just transfer them thinking it's going to extend the clock on the program you're transferring to, it won't. And you could end up actually having them expire sooner if the activity in that program was less than the one that you're transferring from.
So moral of the story, just transfer 1,000 miles into that.
Totally. Or you could just transfer 1,000 membership reward, you know, or whatever, any kind of points into the program and reset the clock. So I think that's probably an easier way to deal with it.
True. All right. Moving on, I think, to Steven. Can the Amex 10 plus referral multiplier stack?
Not stack with each other in that you can't refer someone twice from your card and earn 20 additional points per dollar. However, if you are able to generate a whole lot of restaurant spend and stuff like that, you could, in theory, refer from one card and have it attached to that card. You can then refer from another membership rewards earning card and have the plus 10 attached to that card too. So that way you would double up your potential spend. But I think, is the cap on like $25,000 of spend or something like that? So unless you're able to max that out on one of the cards, then it won't have any benefits.
And it does stack with the category bonus on that card. So if you
So if you get it on the Amex Gold card, then you'll earn 14 points per dollar. But yeah, you can't do multiple referrals from the same card and have it like at 10, at 20, at 30, effectively.
All right, Nick. When applying for a second Ink card, is it similar to the initial application, or do you have to explain to Chase that the new card is for a different business?
You don't have to explain to Chase. Like, you would just apply potentially under a different business. If you have another business, there's no explaining there. It's just a matter of filling out the application and submitting it. But you don't even necessarily have to apply under a different business. You can apply under the same business for another one. So there's no need to even do that. If you have two businesses, great, go ahead and apply under another business. But if you don't, you could just apply for another one under the same business, and that's fine.
All right. So sounds like they don't need to worry about it.
Obviously there's always a chance that you'll get declined. You have to call and talk to a reconsideration person, but there's also a chance that you'll get automatically approved for another of the same for the same business.
All right. Tim, Greg and Nick both said that they would prefer Alaska miles over AA miles. I heard the reasons why, but can you name any sweet spots with Alaska?
Can I name any sweet spots with Alaska? Well, it's a winners Alaska award chart, winners, losers, and sweet spots, I believe is our the post title. And that lists all of the sweet spots on the new award chart. I think that, so there's some like right off the top of my head, with the new chart that just started literally 3 days ago, or was fully put into place, you can get, LATAM business class to South America on shorter haul flights now for $35K one way, business class to New Zealand, if you can find it, is $35K, East Coast to Europe is 45K one way. Iceland Air from, I believe it's Northeast, it's whatever. There's a couple cities that are in like a short band that you can get their business class for 30K to Iceland. But the asterisk being that it's really not business class. It's like internet, or it's just recliner seats. It's not a lie flat seat. Singapore Air used to be, it actually went down. It used to be 100K one way to Asia from the US. It's now 85K from the West Coast. I think it would be more from the East Coast, but from the West Coast. But there's some sort of weird thing going on with Alaska and Singapore right now, where they're not linking up correctly as part of this award transition. So if you look at it right now, I don't think you'll see any availability, but there actually is availability for it if you call in, I've been told. But so I think those are some of the new ones. Anybody else think of something right off the top of my head or off the top of your head? You don't have to worry about my head.
I can't think of anything off of your head.
I'll just say when Carrie read the question and asked you to name the sweet spots, I thought literally they were asking you to name them, like call the Iceland Air one.
That would be Bjorn. That's Bjorn. The East Coast, to Europe, the Northeast Coast to Europe is Bruno.
Because
it's the Italian enforcer.
So then
has to go back to Sicily.
We've covered both methods of answering that question. So very good.
But anyway, we'll throw that post in there. There's a post that goes through all of the new sweet spots. And we actually should update the Alaska sweet spots post as well, but that has the new one.
All right, great. Now we're at Greg. About to apply for the Venture X, and I'm curious if you know anything about the black box that is their approval algorithm. So speculate away. Or unless you have specific data points.
I know
Greg is the perfect person to ask about this too.
I know nothing. No. Anyone here have any useful speculation?
I don't think anyone knows any specific things to do. Like there's speculation that you should say that you don't pay off your credit card each month, but whether or not that does actually have any kind of impact is a whole other matter.
Yeah,
interesting. So it will remain a black box. So
I'll just say really quickly, if it is their first Capital One card, usually the first one is easier than like multiple cards, so you probably won't have much issue with it you always say but you probably won't have much issue with it if it's your first Capital One card. They tend to like to give you one. And then once you want more than one, they start to get very, very, very suspicious.
So I'm going to give Greg a redo question because I think this one is well suited for him. Can you reiterate some of the best practices to limit the risk that Amex doesn't treat tax payments as eligible spend for the sign-up bonus? Have you ever heard of that happening, and how do you prevent it?
I mean, I don't think there's any best practices. You can just do it. For the most part, Amex is going to treat tax payments as legitimate spend for a sign-up bonus. It's not one of their types of spend that is listed as a type that would make your spend ineligible. There have been a couple reports here and there of people who didn't automatically get their sign-up bonus, and when they inquired with Amex, the rep told them that it was because of the tax payment. And I really think that in most cases when that happens, it's because the rep was just looking for an excuse for why this happened. They have no idea why the person didn't get the bonus. Bonus might not have just not come yet. I mean, there's any number of reasons why it messed up or they didn't get the bonus, but I don't think it's very likely that it had anything to do with it being a tax payment.
And I feel like pretty much all of the data points that remember seeing where this kind of thing has happened, and it's related to it, in theory related to a tax payment, is when somebody's used a temporary card number. And I imagine it's because somebody's applied for a new Amex card because they need to make a tax payment, and that's imminent, and so they need to get the card number straight away, and that's why they've done it. So it does seem like possibly using your temporary card number might cause an issue. That's certainly not always the case, but if you are wanting to make tax payments, I would just try and make sure you do it in enough time to be able to get the Amex card, activate it, and then use that card, because I've never heard of any issues where that's been the case. It's generally only been occasional times where it's been the temporary card.
Yeah, and it's worth mentioning that I earned an Amex Business Gold welcome bonus last year entirely on tax payments made with the temporary number. So it worked for me, but Stephen's right. Like there are the data points that we have of people, I think, that have said that they didn't get the bonus automatically, have been people that used the temporary number for their spend. So maybe there is some glitchiness.
Just out of interest, how soon after you made your how soon after you got the temporary card number did you make the tax payments? Okay, because I wasn't too sure if it's like if it's done within an hour or something like that, if that's maybe the issue or something like that, because for whatever reason their system doesn't pick up the transaction entire or like whatever the issue is. But yeah, if it's the same day, then yeah, certainly seems like it should work. So yeah.
All right, Stephen, this one is for you. With the Robinhood card and the USBAR.
US Bank Altitude Reserve.
US Bank Altitude Reserve, wouldn't it make more sense to buy points versus getting points on a card?
It depends on the situation and which points of miles you're actually looking to collect. So with things like Hilton points or IHG points that go on sale for half a cent each, then it might make sense to earn 3% cash back and then buy those. However, there's all kinds of other cards where you can earn airline miles and a category bonus, where you might actually do better than earning at 3% and then buying the points and miles. And then the other thing to consider is the fact that if you're signing up for new cards all the time, then you can earn welcome offers, and the number of bonus miles and points that you can earn from those is going to significantly outweigh the number of points that you're going to earn just through everyday spend on those other cards. So they're certainly not a bad option, but you just need to like weigh up all your different options, because yeah, there could still be much better things to do.
All right, Nick, cruise questions. It seems that Caesar's status alone is no longer enough for cruise matches, and they ask for other offers. So trip to AC is a must. Is that correct? Atlantic City? Is that a must?
Good question. Yeah, I mean, a trip to Atlantic City would definitely get you, at the very least, a free MSC cruise or two. I've seen the data points that Holland America and Princess were not just taking Caesar's Diamond status anymore. They were wanting to see something else. So Atlantic City would help with that. Although just this week, we've got a new match out at Wynn in Las Vegas. So if you're West Coast based and you don't want to make the trek to Atlantic City, then you have and you have Caesar's Diamond status, and you can instead go to Las Vegas and match Caesar's Diamond to Wynn Platinum status. And one of the benefits of Wynn Platinum is a complimentary Holland America cruise up to 7 nights in an ocean view cabin. The one gotcha there is that it requires, in order to use that benefit, you have to have stayed made two stays at Wynn in the past year or the current year that were non-consecutive. So if you haven't stayed at Wynn at all, you're going to have to book two non-consecutive stays at Wynn in order to be able to use that one. Though that could still be a great deal for the free cruise. I assume, now I assumed this and then somebody asked me whether or not it's true, and so I'm not positive here. I assume that booking through Amex Fine Hotels and Resorts will probably satisfy that requirement for your stays at Wynn. Somebody did ask me, well, do you have to book direct at Wynn, or would a Fine Hotels and Resorts booking work? I assume a Fine Hotels and Resorts booking will work, because those are normally treated like a direct booking. I don't know that for sure, but there are some midweek nights that are not super expensive through FHR if you got a platinum card and you're getting the credit. So, but there's some gamble there. But but if you did go to Las Vegas in person, you could match your Caesar's Diamond status to Wynn, and then I believe you'd be able to match at Mirage to Hard Rock Icon, their Unity program Icon, and so you'd have a few statuses to be able to show when you get to submit your offers for cruises. So, and I think Carnival still takes just Caesar's Diamond. So I think you'll at least get the Carnival option. I'm on a Carnival cruise right now as we're we're doing this, somewhere in the Atlantic Ocean right now. So yeah,
no better place to answer cruise questions
right now.
I have a quick question, Nick, on that. I haven't read the Wynn thing yet, but do Encore and Wynn count as like, can you go from Wynn to Encore and have that count as non-consecutive stays, or would they count that as one consecutive stay because you just hopped to the neighbor property?
That's a great question. I don't know for sure. I guess so Wynn and Encore are next door to each other, and it's kind of sort of like one property, but it's also two separate properties. So that's why Tim's asking this. And I guess I don't actually know that a stay at Encore counts now that you mention it, or if it has to be a win, because I know that when I've read what I've read so far is that it's only in Las Vegas. So staying at Encore in Boston will not count for this. And you can't do the match at Encore in Boston. So now that you've asked me that question, that makes me wonder if it if you have to stay on the win side in Las Vegas in order for that to count. Again, I don't know for sure. So that's a really good question. And if we get a data point on it before, I think that match is only through May 31st, if I remember correctly. So if we get a data point on switching between those two properties between now and then, you know, we'll certainly update the cruise post. I intend to update the cruise post with the information on that match, and now look for that to be republished this week, because that's interesting. Also, by the way, the win match is potentially of interest for people because it also platinum status, which again, you can match from Caesar's Diamond to win platinum, comes with $100 spa credit and $150 birthday dinner credit. So you get a little something there too. And I was thinking that spa credit might stack with the spa credit from a Amex Fine Hotels and Resorts booking, because win comes with $150 spa credit when you book through FHR. So if it does stack, then, you know, that'll be great and wonderful too. I won't know about that until next month, though. Hopefully sooner, because hopefully we'll get data points from readers sooner.
Nice. So will you be doing the next Ask Us Anything from the win?
No, maybe. but I do intend to make a trip out and give this a shot if data points continue the way they have, because I would. Why not? I mean, I've done a lot of cruises these last couple of years. Why not take one more while we still can? So, you know, and continue on this match train, because Wynn Platinum could come in handy for something else.
While we still can leads us perfectly into the next question for Tim. As someone who just started in the points game, am I too late with all the devaluations going on? I love questions like this. Tim, mm-hmm. Did this person miss it all?
Yep, you did. I'm sorry. You know, I wish if you would have just started reading last week, it would have been. But no, not at all. Not at all. And without, I mean, there's a bazillion different ways. And without knowing exactly what you're referring to with the devaluation, you know, devaluation is just like inflation, right? Cash prices of things are going to go up. Eventually the points prices are going to go up to accommodate the cash prices. In some cases, there will actually be devaluations as well, where it goes past what the cash prices are and you're actually getting less for each point. That does happen, but it happens. It's going to happen. It's going to keep happening until, you know, we don't have airlines and frequent flyer programs anymore and hotel programs. But in terms of the banks, you know, there's some, specifically Amex has definitely thrown some wrenches into trying to get multiple cards. They have all of these labyrinthine family rules that overlap with labyrinthine Marriott rules about which Marriott cards you could get. But there's still plenty of fish in the sea in terms of cards. I mean, you could start embarking on your points voyage now, and you will have years and years and years of fun ahead of you. There's so much opportunity out there still. And I'm not saying that there won't at some point, you know, that the musical chairs won't end, and, you know, the whole points and miles game will crash completely. But not right now, for sure. We're definitely not anywhere close to that.
Tim, where are you calling in from? Not a cruise.
Show you, but my background's on. I am in SeaTac Airport, right outside of the international arrivals, on a bench. Sharing with some
bench,
lovely folks
over
here.
Cruise buffet.
Yeah, totally. What's fun, and I'm going to take a selfie with everybody once we're off of this. But the last time I actually talked to these guys was this morning on the tarmac in London. And I now literally just got off the flight from London, and I'm on Zoom with these guys again. So it's kind of
What was the time difference for you from our noon meeting to now? 8 hours transpired for me. How many hours transpired for you? I mean, like,
well,
I can't math quick enough.
I think it was the same 8 hours. I was asleep for part of it, so I can't, you know, accurately say that I got it at all. But I think the actual the actual time flowed at the same speed. It was, I was 8 hours ahead when I first,
so you
of where
actually
I'm at now.
Only...
So
it's the same time.
So, well, it was close to the same time, because I think when I said goodbye to you guys, it was like 4 p.m. in London.
You just chilled for like 10 minutes. Then
yeah, yeah, pretty much. Are. Pretty much. Here I am.
Great. Yeah. All right, Greg. Is there a way to avoid, or I guess filter out, an airline in Google Flights Explore tab? There's an option to toggle in the regular flights tab, but not in the Explore tab. Is that your experience?
Yeah, you can, if you do a search for specific flights in Google Flights first, and then set those filters, then switch like your destination to Europe or whatever to make it go to Explore, it usually keeps those filters. So that's what you have to do is do the filters beforehand.
I just have to slip this question in. This is, I think, my favorite question I've ever seen. This is for everyone. Which one of these humans is the frequent miler?
Who knows?
I'll direct that question to Steven.
Oh, no. Wait. Greg.
Yeah, I don't think it helps to point since I can do the pointing.
Yeah,
so I started Frequent Miler as a blog only in 2011, and it was just me for a while, and for the very beginning, I was anonymous. Like, I had a real day job, and I didn't want people knowing what I was doing, so I didn't have my name on the blog at all. I authored everything as Frequent Miler. Later on, when I came out, so to speak, on the blog, I transitioned to Greg the Frequent Miler, and now I'm thinking of changing to actually just having my full name on the blog. But yeah, that's the very brief history of where the Frequent Miler comes from.
Title still says Greg the Frequent Miler, I think.
For now,
right?
Yeah, but I'm thinking of changing that.
So it'd be Greg the Frequent Davis Keen?
Yeah, something like that.
Oh, that has a nice ring.
Maybe we could all be the Frequent Milers. So
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, why
not? That's another way to go.
All right. Let's do another question. Steven, how can I keep my Hawaiian points from expiring? I recently canceled my Hawaiian credit card.
There's absolutely nothing that you can do, because Hawaiian points don't actually expire, so you don't need to worry at all about that.
Oh, nice.
Well, that well done.
Was too quick of an answer, so now I have a quick rip. Stay alive. Oh, here we go. This
that's
is a clarification.
Take good care of yourself. Okay, there you go.
Here's a good clarification on that question, who's the frequent miler? Who has flown the most miles?
Ah, the most frequent miler.
Nah, I don't even begin to know that one.
Yeah, no idea.
I'm pretty sure during the Three Cards, Three Continents thing, I think he probably flew more miles during
just
that
on that one trip.
On a one-way ticket. several years, I imagine.
Yeah, problem for Nick is the cruise doesn't count as flights.
No.
Yeah. You've done a lot of
I don't think I haven't traveled more than Carrie, and probably not more than Tim, I don't think, overall. So I don't know. That's a really tough question. I think
the thing about
forever,
our travels were always, you know, we didn't double back very often at all.
Right. We didn't either in the beginning. We did not. Well, okay. We didn't go as continuously as you guys did, but we didn't double back as many times in the beginning. But nowadays we do. So
I feel like Greg does quite a bit of doubling back. Greg might be the frequent miler.
He might be.
No way of knowing.
Hard to
There's
say.
No way
Hard
of finding out, because none of us have good enough memories. And Greg was still using pencil and paper when he started traveling. So
I thought he was
you
on
can't
chalk
track
and,
those things.
Chalk and stone. I didn't realize he was on pencil and paper that back then.
So one of you was probably using a dry erase board. I don't know.
I mean, it's fair to say we've all traveled a lot, I feel like, right? I mean, not the most of anybody that we know by any stretch necessarily, but I mean, Steven's been traveling nonstop for years, and Carrie's essentially done the same kind of thing, right? And then the rest of us have done a fair amount, so quite a bit of miling around here.
Yeah, I think it's equal miling.
I'd say as far as today goes, though, Tim has us all
Tim wins the day.
Yeah.
Tim definitely wins the day. That's true.
Although, I didn't want to brag, but you're right.
Yeah.
Nick crossed some ocean miles.
Slow and steady wins the race. I've been here in the ocean too, so
good point. Good point.
You crept along. I mean, I drove to the grocery store, so here we go. Okay, I think technically we would have time for me to wrestle up a question, but it would be that entire minute of me trying to wrestle one up. So I think we end early. Sorry, everyone.
We're ending 1 minute early. And don't forget, if you haven't already, please give us a like. And if you don't already subscribe to our YouTube channel, please subscribe and hit that little bell notification so you'll get notified next time we do an Ask Us Anything or when we publish new videos.
Man, hey, even that, hey, that took us to 10 o'clock. So there we go.